Lisa couldn't see which thread to follow. If she stayed and the Gestapo came, there would be no second chance. If she ran, chance would be all she had. Whatever she did, her parents were lost. Whatever she did, there was no guarantee she could keep Lottie safe, which was surely her only job. But she could try. And her parents had each other, which, as her father had made clear, was all they had ever wanted. Lottie stirred in her sleep and pulled her doll closer. She was so small. She looked like she could fold into Lisa's pocket. Lisa moved to the bed and wrapped her arms round her daughter. Lottie curled round her in return, like a vine. Their completeness took Lisa's breath away. "Not tonight." She shook her head as Michael started to argue. "They're going into heaven only knows what tomorrow. And they're still my parents. I need to be here in the morning to say my goodbyes. Whatever we've been to each other, whether they need me to do it or not, the family we once called ourselves deserves that much. And then you'll come. No more excuses." Lisa lay against the pillow, cradling her daughter. She could imagine a life without her parents, although that hurt more than she had words for. It was impossible to imagine a world that didn't spin around Lottie. The love that bound her to her daughter was as strong as iron. It would stand against whatever challenges were coming. She kissed Lottie's soft hair and nodded at Michael. "And then I'll come." Chapter 9. Lisa. Berlin, November 1942 to September 1943. Live your cover story. Lose yourself. Trust no one. Stay alert. In the year since Paul and Margarita had been relocated and Lisa and Lottie had begun living underground, the Nazis' determination to rid Berlin of its Jews had intensified. Their lives were never still. Lisa had worn 4 different names in 12 months and had no doubt that the 5th one was coming. The number of rooms she and Lottie had bounced through had grown too long to count. Michael had let them in and out of basements and attics and cramped, carved-up spaces the length of Treptow and Friedrichshain and Prenzlauer Berg since he had pulled Lisa from Cuxhavener Straße, clutching Lottie and weeping. The sight of her parents walking away, hand in hand, bent into each other and not looking back, had broken her more than she could have imagined. "I can't do it. I can't let them go like this. What if I never see them again?" She had thrust Lottie into Michael's arms and run down the corridor, screaming at them to stop, deaf to Lottie's frightened cries and Michael's furious shouts. "You have to stay. You have to. I'll work something out. I'll hide you." "And what will happen then?" Paul's face, when he turned at her pleading, was grey and so aged, Lisa would have taken him for a stranger if she had passed him in the street. "They will find us, and you will pay. You and Lottie. We can't live with that."
"It won't happen, it won't."
When he reached out and stroked her hair, Lisa thought her heart would stop.
"We haven't been much use to you."
He shook his head as she tried to speak.
"It's best I finally face the truth, even if it is too late to mend things. We thought the world would always be ours, you see, and we're not equipped for what it's become. Your mother is my center, Lisa. Lottie is yours. Let us go. Keep what matters safe."
He turned then, tucked Margarita's arm into his and walked away. Lisa didn't call out again. Paul didn't look back. When Michael picked her up from the floor where she had fallen, she didn't fight him.
She had no memory of leaving the tenement, or of the first scrambled into apartment he left them in. None of the places Michael had taken them to since were in areas she knew. Most of their dark streets continued to remain a mystery. Every move was made at night, and not every apartment was safe to leave, no matter how much Lottie begged for outsides. Every day dawned so fraught with danger, Lisa's nerves were permanently knotted. But at least, as she constantly reminded herself, every day dawned, even if too many brought with them threats she hadn't known were there to fret over.
You have to trust no one, and you have to stay vigilant. The Nazis aren't our only problem. There are captures everywhere. Turncoat Jews turning us in. They work for the Gestapo, hunting down illegals. Some of them are better at the job than their bosses.
Why do they do it? Michael had shrugged, clearly uncomfortably aware how hollow his answer was.
Who knows? Money, I suppose. Or freedom to live on the surface unmolested? Or to save their own families from the deportation trains? Whatever their reasoning, they deserve a bullet for betraying the rest of us. We've gathered what information we can. One day, there'll be a reckoning. Stella Kubler is the worst. But she mostly targets the men dumb enough to fall for her smiles and her flattery. Most of them you can't spot. And that's where the trouble lies. If anyone looks twice at you or makes an approach and acts like they know you, break eye contact at once and get out of sight. There were so many rules, all, Michael insisted, equally essential for survival. Lisa, determined not to put a foot wrong, memorized every one of them until they ran through her head on an endless loop. Stay in if you can. If you must go out, always look smart and spotless, whatever the challenge of finding hot water and soap. Map every street for doorways and alleys that might offer a bolt hole. Be confident. Belong. Walk head up and shoulders square. Carry a visible copy of the Völkische Beobachter, the party-loving newspaper. Never run. Unless someone is pointing a gun at you, and then running will be a waste of time. Never look frightened or dirty or out of place. Never look like how they imagine a Jew. Not that, given the hateful, distorted images the party peddled, any real person ever could. That didn't matter. Posture, clothes, colouring, everything could be used as a weapon. Everything had to be rethought. Lisa had ripped the star from her coat and turned her curls from chocolate brown to platinum blonde before she had changed into her first new name. The dye she made Michael bring stank and stung like a swarm of bees had taken root in her scalp. Lottie had taken one look at her brassy new mother and burst into terrified tears. She'll get used to it. It's best that I look more like her anyway. Thank goodness Bardu managed to pass on his colouring, or I would have had to put her through the same. It was Michael who soothed the little girl in the end, who managed to convince her that her new mummy was as pretty as the old. When the child finally fell asleep, he went back out and returned with all the bottles of dye he could find. It was a good idea. You won't attract attention like this, and blonde hair makes fake papers far easier to manage. The most usable pictures we get are of real German girls. Lisa no longer asked about the ghostly women whose lives she took over. The dead, the bombed out, and the missing. The ones whose identities were stolen from carelessly gaping bags. Nothing mattered except their name and the town they had come from. She learned that set of rules as quickly as the rest. If you are asked for your papers, decide quickly if you actually need to present them. If the police are distracted, or there is a crowd to check through, say that you've newly arrived, that you've not had a moment to register. If you have no choice but to hand them over, say the same thing. You're new here. A seamstress come to work in the factories, still looking for the right accommodation. Tell them you're a widow, that your husband lay down his life for the fatherland. Blink away a few tears. That usually works. We'll keep changing the documents, so the dates you left wherever you came from don't stretch out so long they make your cover suspicious. Michael made it all sound matter-of-fact, and he swore the fake papers he dealt in were foolproof.
He showed Lisa the different components so that she could see the care that went into creating them. The blank forms obtained from a network of well-bribed policemen. The carefully shaved-off photographs. How the official stamp was lifted from the old document to the new by rolling across the impression with a hard-boiled egg and transferring it. As soon as she had her first set, Lisa practiced surrendering them, watching her face in the mirror until her reactions seemed normal. The first time she was challenged, she still thought her heart would leap out of her chest, that the documents she held in her rigid hand would scream liar and Jew. In the end, the policeman barely glanced at them, his attention caught instead by Lottie's cheeky beam. Only one guard tried a trick that even Michael hadn't heard of, clutching a bag full of candy and going down on his knees.
"And what's your mama called, pretty one?"
Lisa didn't know a man could turn so red until Lottie, her head cocked to one side and her hand plunged into the treasure, answered,
"Mama,"
in a world-weary tone.
"But what about in a few months, Michael, when she has more words, or next year, when she will be able to ask him why he wants to know?"
"The war will be done by then. No need to worry," his stock answer, and never one she believed. Michael had treated Hitler's invasion of Russia in 1941 and Stalin's consequent shift from Germany's ally to its enemy as if the turnaround was a triumph of communist foreign policy. That, with everyone finally in the right place and standing shoulder to shoulder against fascism, the war's end was in sight. Lisa could see no sign of that. Berlin was crippled by shortages, even for those who had held on to their rights. Ration cards were as much use in the fireplace as they were in the shops. The Allied bombing raids were kinder than in other German cities, the targets still primarily Berlin's industrial edges, but the effects were creeping closer, pounding homes to rubble, turning Berlin's citizens into refugees. Twice, Michael had led Lottie and Lisa to a safe house, only to find its floors reduced to a cellar that was already full. Everything was rumor. Michael was her only safe connection to the outside. In the few hours Lisa had had to consider an underground life before she was plunged into it, she had pictured it peopled with a new kind of family. Communists and Jews, all of them illegals and party haters, all working together to keep each other afloat. She had consoled herself with the varied faces she would meet, convinced herself there would be playmates for her too alone daughter. Now she spoke only when she had to, and bribed Lottie not to speak at all. All she had moved into was more isolation. They were forbidden a radio. They met no one but Michael. Her news came from days-old newspapers and the snippets of gossip he carried with him. Lisa had become a master of making games from nothing. Lottie had finally grown used to silence. How well the three-year-old could now whisper broke Lisa's heart. None of the apartments they lived in felt like a home. The furniture was always sparse, the walls and the cupboards always bare. Lottie and Lisa's world had shrunk to the size of a suitcase, and nothing personal could be included in there. The only thing guaranteed to survive each flight was Dolly. Lottie was immovable without her. Inside was colourless, outside was mostly a memory. If they ventured out, it was rarely before twilight. The families she heard creeping through corridors or hushing their voices on the other side of thin walls remained invisible. Michael came alone. He moved them from place to place alone. He never spoke about colleagues or friends. "We work in cells, sometimes two, sometimes three, never more. Someone with writing skills, someone with printing skills, someone with a flair for distribution. That's the ideal. I get lists of safe places, notices of the best times to move you and the others, locations for a document drop. I deal in aliases. I don't ask names. It has to be like that. If they catch me, that's all they catch."
"Don't you get lonely?"
He hadn't understood the question. Why would I? I'm too busy. There's always people to move. There's always leaflets to spread round the city. Our system is so streamlined now. Even the Nazis would envy it. Our agents have infiltrated the factories, the universities, even the postal system. And you should see how we hide our material. The last lot went out disguised as cake recipes. The batch before that were wrapped in guides about how to work a camera. That one was my idea. Open them up, though, and the message is the same. Hitler can't win the war. He can only prolong it. You are being robbed of your rights. It's time to stand up for freedom. Everyone's reading them. There's so many out there. They have to be. His eyes were as bright as the boy she had found stealing in the salon 4 years ago. His passion for the struggle and his ideals were undimmed. Lisa envied him. She longed to play a part that would make her feel less of a burden, to be doing something and not simply waiting on the war's end, but with Lottie so little and so dependent on her, she couldn't find a role. It doesn't matter. Keeping Lottie safe is the only thing that counts for now. We need our children, Lisa. Too many have already been lost. If this is still going on in a year or two, when she's bigger, we'll find you something to help with. Don't worry about that now. That had been the night when it happened. When the contrast between his life, which burst with purpose, and hers, which felt lost in the shadows, overwhelmed her with a loneliness that choked up her throat. When the urge to be young and carefree pushed aside the constant need to be careful. When Lottie, for once, had fallen asleep so well fed, there was no chance of her waking. Their coming together was unplanned, unexpected, welcome. A hand to brush away her frustrated tears became a shoulder to cry on. Lips murmuring soothing words drew closer, found a new kind of language. The tempo between them shifted. A first hesitant kiss became an exploration of hands and mouths that dissolved edges. When Michael was the first to draw back, rubbing his eyes, asking, "Are you sure?" Lisa took the lead. "Stop thinking. Stop questioning. Just be." For once in Michael's life, he listened. There should have been awkwardness, the clash of a long-fixed friendship blundering into uncharted territory. There wasn't. "You feel like coming home." Michael had whispered that as the sun wriggled through the window's thin covering and Lottie stirred. Lisa had raised herself on one elbow, staring down at him as the sunlight softened his thin features, remembering the last face that had lain next to hers. "Whatever this is, you won't let me down. I don't want promises, and I won't make them, not while we're forced to live like this, but I need to know that. If I need you, you won't let me down." He pulled her to him, kissed away her doubts as their bodies came back together, kissed her so deeply at the door when he left that Lottie started laughing. Lisa went through the next few days feeling lighter, less frighteningly alone. "It was just one night, nothing to make a big fuss of." Lottie smiled back at her mother and carried on playing. One night, perhaps, but it had surprised them both with its tenderness. And there would be another, if the world would settle long enough to make some space. One night that had slipped between her and fear, at least for a little while, that brought with its kisses a sliver of hope.
"He won't be long now, monkey. Another few minutes, that's all."
How many times had she said that in the 2 years since their hidden life had begun? Too many for Lottie to care. She didn't look up from the bed where she was feeding Dolly the last breakfast crumbs. The last crumbs of anything. An extravagance that made Lisa nervous, despite Michael's sweeping assurances. "Finish off whatever food is left. I'll bring more for the train, and then, when you get to the Spreewald, There'll be so much to eat, Lottie will think every day is her birthday. Michael had swung Lottie round and made her laugh, and never thought the word birthday meant nothing to her. It had been impossible to start marking the day, so Lisa had filed it away instead with all the other missed treats she would one day make up for. Birthday parties, Christmas, ice cream, a pet. The list she carried in her head of everything her daughter's childhood was meant to be, and wasn't, kept growing. Be ready by 6. She'd been ready by 5, their few possessions packed. Lottie was so used to nighttime flits, she could pull on her dress in the dark. This would be the last change of name, the last change of address, or so Michael had promised. A safe place to sit out the war, he swore, would soon be ending. So where was he? Wait till you see the house we're going to live in. Michael says it's so huge, you'll have your own bedroom. And there's a garden and an orchard for running around in. And I bet there'll be a cat. All big country houses have a cat. Gabbling away to stop herself panicking, pouring out another litany of words Lottie didn't know how to react to. Lottie continued feeding her doll without a glance for her mother. Lisa checked her papers for the 20th time. Lena Edelman, a name closer to her old one in case Lottie's rapidly expanding language skills really had remembered anything from before. A new identity playing a widow who had found work as a maid, moving out of Berlin to work on a farm and find her daughter a better life. It made as much sense as any of the others she'd practiced. It would, at least, give her a job and a purpose. This will be good for you both, I promise. Despite what Lisa had said that first night, Michael had been full of promises lately. Ever since they had snatched a second and then a third night together, since their connection had deepened enough for her to stop counting. They were more careful now, though, neither of them having any desire to add a pregnancy to the tightrope they walked. Or not yet. Michael had blushed when he said that, and grinned like his old self again when he saw Lisa's answering smile. Now, when Lisa watched Lottie playing on her own, she imagined her in the middle of a trio of siblings. She conjured the family around the little girl that she had once longed for, and wove brothers and sisters into every story she told. When Michael heard her doing that, he began to pick up the same dream. The couple who agreed to take you in are kind-hearted people. They've helped others. They know how to keep you safe. You could make a proper life with them. Give Lottie as near as the war will let you to a real childhood. And then, when it's done, I'll come there and I'll get you. We'll come back to Berlin and we'll make a life. The three of us first, and then the rest. Maybe we'll find your parents. Whatever happens, we'll start over together. As a family. If that's what you'd like. Such a shy look when he said that. His face all boyish. Lisa had smiled back at him and realized that, yes, she would like it. Very much. There was no time for any more declarations, but that felt like enough. Except today was the first step, and he wasn't here. Michael was almost 2 hours late, and he was never late. Punctuality was a code he lived by. That and reliability were the twin pillars of the struggle's creed. Lisa's stomach churned. Please God, he hadn't got caught up in the latest leaflet's distribution, like he used to do in the old days, and forgotten them. Not after all they had been through. They had already been in this apartment too long. Nearly 4 months. Time enough to be noticed. For the old lady who lived opposite to remark on, how lonely that poor little girl must be. For Lisa to be looked at twice by the men clustered smoking outside the block's scruffy door. She hadn't mentioned any of that to Michael. He was watching out for their safety, she knew he was. Her appearing nervous would only put him on edge. Everything was ready. There was nothing left to do and distract her. Lottie was polished and shiny in her smartest dress, although it hung too loosely when it should have been too tight by now. Michael had found them a smarter case than the battered one that had limped beside them from flat to flat. He had also found Lisa a hat
to cover her grown-out hair. It was a silly pancake of a thing, trimmed with jaunty silk roses more suited to a wedding. It made her plain blue blouse and skirt look shabby, but it would do the trick. The shops had run out of hair dye months ago, and Lisa, in Lottie's words, was starting to look stripy. 8 o'clock. It would be too late to go if he didn't come soon. The plan, the little she knew of it, was for her and Lottie to catch an early train before the day's checks began in earnest. I can't come with you. Even with my brilliantly staged limp, a man my age in civilian clothes draws questions like a magnet. You'll travel with a woman, a country sort, who won't attract attention. I'll pass you on to her. It had annoyed her, that. The implication that she was a parcel who didn't need to know what her label said. It had also annoyed her that he wouldn't give her any details beyond the bare minimum of the town in the Spreewald and a morning train. But the struggle demanded secrecy, and the struggle always won. And if it was the struggle that had delayed him this morning, he could forget about her biting her tongue anymore.
Michael coming.
Lisa let go of her breath in a sharp exhale. Lottie's well-trained ears had heard the whisper of footsteps before she had. Come here now, sweetheart. We'll have to move quickly if we're going to get to the station on time. She waited for the customary 3 raps on the door. Nothing. What was keeping him?
What did you hear, monkey? Feet banging.
Why would Michael run up the stairs with no care for the noise? Lisa took a step back from the door.
Lottie, I don't think it's Michael. We may have to...
A door slammed further down the corridor. Another one slammed closer. The unmistakable sound of boots came crashing up the hall.
Mama's hurting, Lottie. Stop it!
Lisa had Lottie's hand held so tight the tiny fingers had turned purple.
Quick, get under the bed.
Lottie stared and began sucking her sore hand.
It's a game, monkey. It will be fun, I promise, but you need to be quick.
Her voice was too shrill, her mouth too stretched. Lottie whimpered and edged away.
Please, Lottie, do what I say. I'm going to come under there with you.
Open up!
Lottie shot onto the bed like a firecracker exploding and hurled her body across Dolly's.
Open up!
There was a knife lying among the breadcrumbs on the table. Lisa was a finger's stretch away from it when the flimsy lock disintegrated. A green uniformed man strode in, wiping his hands. He swallowed her and the room in one sweeping look. Remember the rules. Except this wasn't a busy street with places to duck into, and Lottie wasn't charming, but terrified. Papers. Lisa stood as tall and still as she could.
Is something wrong?
The officer held her gaze for a fraction too long.
Your neighbours think there is. They think there are all kinds of people hiding out in this building who shouldn't be here. Let's hope you're not one of them.
He held out his hand. Papers. Lisa removed them from her pocket, slowly and deliberately, praying the grainy photograph would withstand his mistake-hunting scrutiny.
Why is there a suitcase?
Be polite, not guilty. Don't cower.
I have a new job, as a maid on an estate in the Spreewald. We were about to leave for the station. I am a widow. My husband died. Fighting for his country.
His expression didn't flicker.
The address of this estate?
Leder, in the Lubenau district?
Thank God she had managed to get that much at least. He was still holding tight to her documents, looking from the photograph to her and back again like a slowly swooping searchlight.
Your permit to leave Berlin?
She handed it over. It felt as flimsy as tissue.
Mama?
Lottie's whimper held the threat of a scream.
My daughter is afraid. She isn't used to such intrusions. Let me calm her.
She should have been more deferential. The officer's hand whipped out and snaked round her wrist.
Take off your hat.
My hair, it isn't as clean as I'd like it.
He ripped the flimsy straw away, leaving her dark roots and washed-out blonde streaks exposed, and flung it on the floor.
And another lie. Like your papers are lies, and no doubt this tale about your hero husband. Do you really think we are so easily fooled? What are you? A Jew? What is your name? Do not waste my time with the one printed here.
Her torn-up papers followed the hat. Lottie had started to sob, her breath coming in ragged gasps.
Fight back. Keep her safe.
Lisa faced him as squarely as she could.
I don't know what you mean. My documents are old, perhaps, and a little faded, but they are genuine, I assure you.
You assure me?
His hand was at her throat before she saw him move.
How clever you think you are with your dyed hair and your stolen name.
He squeezed.
Stick to your story if you want. I can kill you as easily here as anywhere else. Then I can kill your daughter.
He relaxed his grip a little.
Or perhaps I could kill her first.
Lisa had never seen anything as terrifying as her attacker's slow smile.
No! Leave her alone! Don't touch her!
He lowered his hand.
Then tell me your name.
Lisa.
She paused.
Lisa, Sarah. Elfman.
So a Jew. How observant your neighbours are.
And the child?
Is her father a Jew as well?
Her father is a Frenchman.
So a whore as well as a liar and a Jew. What a delightful combination.
Outside the open door, the hallway was filling up. Shapes shuffled by, some of them weeping.
Time for you to join the rest of the scum. Move.
She hesitated. He drew out his gun. She glanced at the table, but the knife was too far away. The gun was too close. Keeping an eye on the soldier, Lisa picked up the case and reached out for Lottie.
Come on now, sweetheart. It's time to go.
But Lottie curled up tighter and wouldn't budge.
No. Don't like him, want?
Lisa ran and scooped her up before the name spilled, ignoring the child's furious kicking.
Move! I won't tell you twice, and I will shoot her first.
Lisa wrapped Lottie into her coat as the gun barrel swiveled.
We have to do what he says. There's nothing to be scared of. Hold tight to Dolly.
She followed the pointing gun out of the room, into the hall, where the snaking line shuffling down the stairs put an end to Lottie's thrashing. The child shrank into Lisa, the ragdoll pinned against her chest, her thumb jammed in her mouth. Lisa murmured soothing noises into her daughter's hair and wondered which of them she was doing it for. The pavement they were forced onto was packed, other apartment blocks emptying out with the same rifle-driven speed. Lisa scanned the street for a place to run and hide, but every corner and alleyway was blocked.
Onto the trucks! Men to the left! Women and children to the right!
Soldiers were lined up the full length of the pavement, a number of them holding snarling dogs on the end of chains that were so long the animals were within snapping distance of coats and skirts. Lottie squealed at the barking and turned rigid.
They're just dogs. They won't hurt you.
The beast's bared teeth made a lie of that. There was no time to invent a calming story. There was no time to do anything but what they were told. Lisa kept Lottie's head pressed into her shoulder as they scrambled onto the truck. When she leaned out to ask for someone to pass up her suitcase, a soldier kicked it away. Lisa refused to think about that. She refused to think about anything beyond keeping Lottie quiet and not drawing attention. She found a space and lifted Lottie's chin up to look at her.
It's an adventure monkey, that's all. Like in the fairy stories I've told you. Do you remember Little Red Riding Hood and Snow White?
How brave they had to be at the start, when the wolf and the queen were naughty,
and how well it turned out for them both in the end. Her voice was too high-pitched. She was talking too fast. She wasn't surprised when someone told her to shut up.
Where are we going?
The truck roared away. No one answered. The lorry's tarpaulin had come down with a slam that had turned the vehicle's interior as dark as night and cut the outside away as if a knife had sliced through it. Lottie was sobbing, but not like a child. Her tears were silent things that pooled across Lisa's neck like a stain. Come on now, sweetheart. Nothing's worth all these tears. I've got you. Nothing bad's going to happen. Another assurance she couldn't guarantee, with as much substance as every other promise that there would be more food, that there wouldn't be any more running, and any more houses that she had wrapped so uselessly round her daughter. Like every promise Michael showered on me? Lisa couldn't think about that. She couldn't think about anything, except staying strong for Lottie. Look at me, monkey. She pressed her nose so close to Lottie's that their hair fell round them like curtains. Promises were all she had to offer, so she would keep on making them. This will be done soon, and then, when it is, I'll make everything right. We'll go to the big house like Michael said we would, and there'll be cake for tea, and ice cream, and a new dress for Dolly. Does that sound good? Is that something you'd like? Lottie gulped and nodded, her eyes closing as Lisa rocked her. I can't do this. I'm only 23. I'm not old enough for this. I can't make this all right. Lisa gulped back a sob. An arm eased out in the darkness, and Lisa found her own head nestled against a warm, motherly shoulder. She turned into it, for a moment, and let herself, very briefly, cry. Hertie. Its arches and gleaming windows were unmistakable, even in the scant minute Lisa had to peer at her surroundings as she lifted Lottie from the truck. Hertie, which meant Alexanderplatz, which meant
line up, three wide, move!
The Alex, the Red Castle, the headquarters of the Berlin police. Lisa clutched her saucer-eyed daughter and tried not to shiver as the vivid red bricks and squat squared-off tower loomed over them. Maybe Michael would guess where they were and come. Then she remembered the night of Otto's arrest and her advice, and knew it was hopeless. Michael would risk his own life for her. She knew that instinctively. But he was bound too tight with the resistance to risk all the rest his capture would mean.
Round the back! Move!
They were herded, half running through a door that was wide and domed and high enough to admit a carriage. Lisa lurched as paving stones gave way to slick and greasy cobbles. Lottie's arms clung limpet tight. There was no chance of an escape, although she kept looking. There were too many guns. Barely a dozen steps, and they were across the deserted courtyard and through a second, narrower doorway, which led them into a corridor whose heavy wooden panelling ate up the light. Guards streamed in front of the women, slamming open the green metal doors that marched down both sides of the hall.
Inside! Inside!
They chopped up the column, sending women whirling left and right. The room Lisa was pushed into was dark and stank of unwashed bodies.
Come over here. There's a few inches left.
It was a cell. Lisa tried to stay with room, but couldn't make the word stick, even inside her own head. Tiled walls, bodies curled on a plain stone floor, one watery bulb dripping out a thin yellow circle. Lisa followed the calling voice to the furthest corner, and slid down into the gap that was offered, making herself into a softness for Lottie. Within minutes, she could feel herself bruising.
It's not the easiest place to push through when you're balancing a child.
The woman's voice had the texture of gravel.
Do you have a cup?
What? A cup? No, I don't have anything. I had a case, but Lisa was too worn out to dredge up anything more. As her eyes adjusted to the gloom, the cell's occupants assumed more definite shapes. Women, a scant handful of children, all of them still. If they closed their eyes, they would turn into corpses.
Don't.
Lisa gasped as a hand caught her chin and pulled her round. The woman was younger than her voice suggested, although her face was stretched and haggard.
You need to stay calm and focus on getting through. Most of us have been here for days, which is why we look so feeble. What day is it?
Thursday.
That's what I thought. Although, so little changes in here it was hard to be sure. Well, that's good news for you. From what we can make out, the transports from here leave on a Friday. All you've got to survive is one night. That's doable, right?
Lisa managed a nod.
Good girl.
The woman released her grip and rummaged under her skirt.
Here, I've got a spare cup. Don't ask me how. They bring us water at midday, usually more at night, and bread, which is always stale, but it's edible. Most of us give a bit of our piece to the children.
Lisa shifted Lottie more securely onto her lap. The child's eyes were closed, but her breathing was too quick for her to be sleeping. The woman snaked out her hand again as Lisa tried to look into her daughter's face.
Let her be. You can't explain this. She doesn't need you to try.
It was advice Lisa was more than willing to take.
You said they'd move us tomorrow. Where do we go?
The woman eased her back against the icy tiles and groaned.
A labor camp. Rumors I heard before I was fool enough to end up here suggest the most likely one is Ravensbrook. It's not so far from the city, and it's for women and children only, so maybe it won't be too bad.
She nodded at Lottie.
You should follow her lead. Close your eyes. Sleep, if you can. Save your strength. When they want you to move, they don't wait around.
She didn't speak to Lisa again, and nor did anyone else. The crowded cell stayed quiet, the noise never rising above a murmur, even when the meager bread and dusty water came. Lisa whispered nursery rhymes to Lottie, trying to wrap the little girl inside the familiar rhythms of Hoppe Hoppe Reiter and Ein, zwei Papagei, the ones Minnie had sung to her long ago. Lottie remained silent or hid behind sleep. Lisa dozed in and out of dreams that were as bad as being awake, filled with images of her parents walking away and Michael forgetting her. When the door crashed open, she and everyone else jumped.
On your feet! If your name is called, answer yes and move into the corridor.
The list ran so quickly. Lisa almost missed them when hers and Lottie's names rang out.
Wet Mama.
Lottie's face crumpled.
It's not your fault. It doesn't matter.
Lisa pulled the child's soaked knickers away and turned her cardigan into a towel. Lottie had recoiled in horror from the communal pail that desperation had made Lisa use, and Lisa hadn't had the heart to force her.
There, all good again. When we get where we're going, there'll be new clothes, I'm sure of it.
She wasn't sure of anything. The name Ravensbrook meant nothing. The word camp had too many meanings to contemplate. As to why cowed women and huddled children were seen as a threat that needed locking away, she couldn't think of anything that made sense of that.
Line up, three wide, move!
The same orders as before, but a faster speed demanded from the stumbling prisoners than on the journey in. The column ran double time back through the corridor and into the courtyard. It was dark, the stars still visible. It was impossible to tell if it was early in the morning or late at night. Trucks waited by the outer door, their engines growling. The women scrambled on, urging the children to move quicker as the guards hurled orders around them. The journey through the city was too fast to take a bearing. The station platform they landed on was too packed to see a name. The train they were herded onto was so crowded, Lottie was pressed into Lisa with barely a space to breathe. Everything moved so quickly. All Lisa could do was obey. There were no seats. There were no spaces between the women standing shoulder to shoulder, shrinking away from contact or propping each other up. There were no windows low enough or wide enough to see a chink of the sky. The air hung sour with sweat and the ammonia stink of fear. Lisa braced her feet, braced Lottie against her shoulder. She wriggled up her arm until her watch was visible, counted 1 hour, then another. The train rumbled and belched out smoke, which seeped into the carriage and covered the women with polka dot smuts. When the engine finally shuddered to a halt and the doors sprung open, bodies toppled out like bricks. "Hold tight, monkey. Don't let go of me." The words didn't need saying. Lottie's fingers bit through Lisa's skin. More trucks were lined up, waiting. The women were ringed by soldiers. Any movement away from the crush was impossible. Lisa caught glimpses of a cloudless cornflower sky. The fruity scent of pine set her nose twitching.
"Get down! 5 wide! Form up!"
5 this time, not 3. A new number to shuffle them with. The women formed into lines, their mouths silently counting along the rows. The guns were too close to risk a mistake.
"Put the children down. Tell them to walk."
Lisa was stranded too visibly at the column's edge. She tried to swap places, to wriggle in towards the center and a foot or two of safety. A rifle butt shoved her forward before she could slide in.
"Children down! If I have to repeat that, I shoot."
"You heard what he said, monkey. You have to walk."
"No, can't. Too tired."
Lisa stifled a cry as the rifle cocked.
"Do as you're told. No more arguing."
Fear made her voice harsh. Lottie's eyes filled with tears. Lisa wished that she could swallow the words back, that she could bend down, whisper that she was sorry, explain that her sounding cross was just part of this strange game they were all playing. But the soldiers were shouting, and the column was marching, and it was all she could do to keep Lottie upright. "I'll say it later. I'll cuddle the darkness away as soon as she's safe." The shouting throttled up again, harsh cries to move, to be quicker, pushing the prisoners down a cobbled road, past a row of balconied houses perched high on a hill, and a forest of fir trees that smelled like Christmas. They were marched so fast, Lottie was almost flying, her wrist locked in Lisa's hand.
"Eyes forward, mouths shut."
Whips cracked along the lines. Lottie stumbled on, no longer sobbing, although her whole body was shaking. Lisa kept pulling and didn't dare look down.
"Stop!"
The ground softened, took on the powdery feel of sand. Lisa took a breath that tasted as fresh as spring rain, lifted her head and almost laughed. The setting was picture postcard perfect. A holiday scene. A lake stretched out only feet away from where the women had been herded, its placid water a mirror of the morning's blue sky. Linden trees edged the high wall they were standing near and softened the camp's metal gates with velvety green. Lisa could see banks of red flowers nodding their way along the neatly laid road that stretched out on the other side. Hope inched its way back. Lisa smiled at the woman shivering next to her. Heads rose across the tightly packed column. The smile passed tentatively on. Lisa loosened her grip on Lottie's wrist, kept her back straight and bent her knees so she could slip a hand round her daughter's tiny shoulders.
"Lottie, look. It's pretty. There's flowers and a lake you might be able to paddle in."
Other whispers followed hers, spreading out like ripples.
"No talking!"
Not a man's voice anymore, a woman's, sharp and strident. In the relief of being in a gentler landscape than anyone expected, someone didn't hear or didn't obey quickly enough. A hand shot out, cracked hard against skin. Another voice screamed. The next slap rang harder. Guards fanned out and began striding down the rows. Not soldiers, but a troop of almost identical blonde women made thick-set and solid by square caps and wide-shouldered black capes. They didn't have guns, but they had whips they sent flying. One sliced through the air a foot away and crashed Lottie into Lisa's legs. "Noses to the front!" The guards began carving the packed crowd ahead of them into slices, forcing their shaking captives in tight columns through the gates. Lisa saw a girl stumble, saw another fall under a thick fist as she kneeled down to help. The air grew dark with sobs and slaps and the discordant screeching of "bitches." Lottie's hand shot back into Lisa's and set rigid and claw-like. Lisa ached to scoop her up, to press the white face hard into her shoulder and make a shield against the cruelty unfolding with such malevolent speed. As they drew nearer the gates, the guards' excitement flared. A whip tore open a cheek a few paces in front. A kick leveled a woman who'd fallen out of line. The slightest movement or whimper, one step's hesitation, and they pounced like jubilant tigers. There was no time to think, no time to do anything other than stay in line and follow the hailstorm of orders. "I'm here. I have you." Lisa poured the words through every inch of her body that was touching her daughter's and squeezed the hand curled inside hers. Lottie didn't respond. The gates were coming closer now, a dozen or so steps, and they would be inside the camp. She could see the women who had already entered marching down the long road between the barrack blocks. There didn't seem to be as much shouting on that side. There certainly seemed to be fewer guards visible. Other women had noticed the change in mood inside the walls. The rows around Lisa began to grow calmer, more obedient. "Perhaps it's bad out here because it's so crowded, because we're all so nervous. Maybe things will be easier once we get through." Lisa shuffled forward. Some of the guards had lowered their whips as the women gradually stopped resisting their orders. Lisa squeezed Lottie's hand. "Another few steps, and then I'll be able to hold you. I'll be able to make all this right." Her row inched quietly towards the gates. Three more lines in front of them, and then they would be inside and safe. Lisa was about to bend her knees and risk another whisper when she felt her arm wrench. Lottie had frozen. What was she doing? There was a guard standing too close for Lisa to speak. She pulled on Lottie's hand, but the child pulled sharply back and knocked Lisa into the woman behind. A ripple ran along the row. "What is she afraid of?" And then Lisa caught it, a scent weaving towards them, raw and meaty and hot. Dogs. Lisa groaned. The three guards closest to the gates had dogs running beside them. Their leads, like at Alexanderplatz, long and loose enough for the animals to get within pawing distance of the women. The dogs' mouths were open, the scent in the air, their foul, panting breath. No wonder the prisoners in front of them had entered the camp without a sound. They weren't calm. They were terrified.
"Mama, no! Not walk by them!"
A guard turned, her small eyes hunting for the source of the sound. Lisa couldn't risk even the tiniest whisper. She squeezed Lottie's hand instead and tried to pull her forward, praying that speed would smooth the dog's straining muscles and teeth to a blur. Lottie's legs had taken root. As Lisa yanked again, the girl tumbled and the hand clutching her doll shot open.
"Dolly!"
Lottie's cry rose like a bird. She stretched her fingers wide, but the ragdoll had already twirled away and landed a pace from where the dogs were pouring. The nearest one pounced, its jaws as wide as if it was grinning. One flick of its bullet nose, and the doll went floating back through the air. As it toppled down again, another dog leaped. Dolly's head was caught up in one slavering mouth, her feet caught up in another.
No!
All the silences of the last 24 hours, of the last 20 months, gathered themselves into Lottie's scream. Her pain rang around the lake shore, as pure and piercing as a blade.
Shut her up!
The guard, with eyes as black as ebony chips, was coming. Lisa tried. She threw her hands over Lottie's mouth, but Lottie struggled and bit and thrust them away. The dogs pulled. The doll burst open in a ragged cloud. Lottie's scream roared like a tempest.
She's a child. She doesn't understand.
But Lisa's plea was no match for the dog's frantic barking, for the guard's frenzied shouts, for the searching eyes that had found their target. The hand that grabbed Lottie and tore her away was the size of a man's, flat and broad and scarred in a zigzag line that ran from its middle finger down to the thick-set wrist. It circled Lottie's neck like a collar. Seconds. That was all it took. For the snap. For the splash that swallowed the broken body down into the lake. For Lisa's world to fall, hopelessly and forever apart. Part 3. Chapter 10. Karen. Aldershot, November 1989. Karen closed the front door, her knees sagging as the night caught up with her.
Go home, get some rest. He's stable. We don't expect any change for a while.
Home? Was that what she should call this place? It was the shorthand her friends still used to describe the houses they grew up in, no matter how many new families and mortgages stood between then and now. Karen studied the hallway's nondescript paint and old-fashioned coat stand, the age-spotted mirror with its fine layer of dust. Nothing had changed in the 11 years since she had lived here. Home. She tried it. It sat no more comfortably with her now than it had then. She knew she should have booked a hotel, taken a moment to think before she jumped into the car, but the thought he might be dying had terrified her. She could do it now, but a day and a night with no sleep beyond what could be snatched in a hospital chair had left her head fuzzy. It was only a house. Would it be that difficult to manage a few hours inside it? Enough time at least to regroup and maybe take a bath. Karen's skin prickled with the anticipation of hot water and vanilla-thick bubbles. Despite the sharp November wind and the threat of snow hanging in the charcoal sky, the upside-down day clung damp and sticky. The early morning motorway dash, the overheated ward, the shock of seeing her father so helpless, a gaping hospital gown wiping away the familiarity of his collar and tie dignity. A bath, then, to straighten her out and settle her nerves. Karen was on the bottom stair before she remembered that the towels would be cardboard thin and the soap unperfumed carbolic. Her shoulders re-knotted.
You have to do something. You can't just stand here.
Her voice croaked from a night spent whispering. It still cracked like a gunshot down the hallway, stirring memories like dry leaves as it went. Was that why she'd spoken out loud? To stamp herself on the house's silence? To make the house fit round her for a change? Talking to herself was something she never did, despite living on her own. It was something she had never been remotely tempted to do. Karen shivered and failed to convince herself the chilly air was to blame.
What is it you English like when everything is falling to pieces?
Father Christoph. She hadn't thought of him for years.
And isn't it odd that you've remembered him now you've come back here? So don't overthink it.
She threw out the words and followed them, imagining her voice carving out a path like a force field. A form of madness, no doubt, but at least one of her own choosing. The kitchen she eased herself into had the sour edge of too long left garbage. Karen opened a window and began rooting through the cupboards. Not tea. 7:30 in the morning or not, she was past that sort of soothing, and surely she'd been up for so long the rules didn't count. She stretched onto her toes and was rewarded with the bottle of whiskey Andrew was never without, whatever his indifference to other home comforts. She poured a generous measure, realized she couldn't remember when she'd last eaten, and set about foraging. The fridge was a forest of Tupperware and carefully parcelled out portions. Karen located cheese and a jar of pickle, slotted bread under the eye-level grill. The kitchen was, as ever, ordered with military precision, the tea towels smartly lined up on their pegs, the floor brush firmly twinned with its dustpan. Not unlike her own, neatly kept kitchen, although she doubted Andrew would ever believe that.
There really is no one at home to take care of him.
No, not full-time. I wish there was, but my mother is dead and I'm an only child. Besides, I live in London, and he's very happy here. He would never agree to move from Aldershot. And my job is demanding. I have holiday owing, which, of course, I'll use, but then I have to get back to it.
The consultant had shaken his jowls and sighed over modern women's priorities. Karen wouldn't budge. She couldn't. She struggled to adequately describe her relationship with her father to herself and to the people who cared about her. She certainly wasn't about to expose it to the consultant's insulated ideas. The nurse had waited until the great man had moved on and then handed over a list of phone numbers.
Assisted living is your best bet. He'll be here for a few weeks yet. There's time to get things sorted.
Assisted living. Andrew would call it going into a home, and no doubt hate anywhere she suggested. But what choice did they have? Karen tried to imagine a world in which she played the doting daughter to his grateful father and poured herself another drink to wash away the guilt. A heart attack, and a serious one at that, needing something called stents and a long recuperation. It was the last thing she'd expected. Admittedly, her father was 73, but his military training had kept him fit, and he had always seemed, physically at least, far younger than his years. The sun prodded pale and watery through the window. Karen finished the last of her toasted cheese as the light inched in. The kitchen wasn't as clean as first appearances suggested. A spider's web looped from the light fitting. Rusty stains spattered the hob. Karen turned away. They played such tightly defined roles around each other. He would hate her to suspect his high standards were slipping. Well, she could play the good daughter this far, at least. She found a bottle of bleach and steeled her tired body to tackle the cleaning. Then the disinfectant smell flew back hospitals and tubes and translucent, waxy skin, and she found herself sobbing. The kitchen wobbled, expanding and contracting around her, as if she was shrinking. How could the house still unpeel her like this? It shouldn't mean a thing anymore. It wasn't as if she had ever been a regular visitor. The nights she had spent under its roof, since she left, barely made it into double figures. Karen counted back through them, aware that if she revealed their sparseness to anyone else, they would shame her. A couple of miserable Christmases until she found friends with families big enough to absorb her. A handful of trips back in her university days, usually motivated by lack of money. None at all, since she joined her London-based architect's firm. She wasn't estranged from her father, even in her darkest moments. Karen couldn't imagine anything so final. But they had rules. They met now for lunches in neutral places, stiffly edged restaurants in Kensington or Chelsea,
where surviving without a spat until the third course classed as a successful visit. It wasn't meant to be like that. She could hear her teenage self sniffing. You were supposed to do better. You were going to be kinder and calmer and start building bridges, don't you remember? You were going to find your father and let him be the pathway to finding your mother. It had been a good plan. It had been the plan the whole way back from Berlin, once Karen accepted that the city had left her with bigger questions than she could tackle alone. Father Christoph had shaken the pieces of her childhood out of their old slots, and Karen had travelled back from Germany as determined as a new-minted evangelist not to stuff them back in. She had failed at the first hurdle. Her good intentions had proved themselves to be skin deep. That realization might make her squirm now, but it was the truth. She hadn't tried to mend fences. She had postured. She had carried on doing what she always did, setting her father tests and letting him fail, while she watched in disdain from her precious high ground, deciding to be hurt when he wasn't at the school gate to greet the coach, or in the house when she tipped her bags all over the sitting room, conveniently forgetting that she hadn't bothered to let him know the day, never mind the time, she would be returning, deciding to be disappointed at his lack of interest even though she had retreated to her bedroom long before he came home, and made no effort to get up before he went out again in the morning. Karen winced, remembering how she had arranged herself on the sofa the next evening, wearing her best "I forgive you" face. What had been wrong with her? Why hadn't she run to him when the door opened and surprised him with a hug, startled them both into the new start they needed? Because she was too proud, or too angry, or afraid of what he might tell her, or of what he had failed to? Whatever excuse she had found herself then, or plastered over the past now, it didn't matter. The outcome wouldn't change. Instead of moving towards him, she had waited, and he had waited, and the moment had crumpled into, "So you didn't even bother to miss me then," on one side, and a weary headshake on the other. 10 minutes restored to each other's company, and they were thrust back into old ways. A few months later, she had left for Manchester and told herself he was glad of it. She had never once asked him if that was true. Now, with Andrew lying in the hospital, all she could feel was the waste of it. Karen put down the glass and realized, once again, she was crying.
"Tell me what you want. At least give me a chance. Stop trying to end us before we get started."
How many boyfriends had hit her with that line? How many times had, "I don't mean to do it," died on her lips?
"So you struggle to commit. You haven't met the one you want to get really close to, that's all. When you do, everything will be different." All her well-meaning friends said it and swept away Karen's, "But what if I can't?" as if the fear buried in the words couldn't possibly be real. She had tried. She had let Joe get very close, and she hadn't set him tests, at least, not ones he didn't know about. She had so wanted it to work, for them to win the whole package. But then she would panic and push him away and fall apart when he pressed her on why. It was Joe who had delivered the worst parting shot of all the ones she had gathered, hurled on a blast of confusion and anger when she shied from cementing 2 years of shared beds into something more permanent.
"We all have hurt, Karen. You're not a child anymore. You can't keep hiding behind your dead mother."
"And is that what you do?" The therapist's question, Karen could never find the right words to answer. The therapy sessions abandoned, like the pills a doctor offered that remained uncollected, in favour of locking the past firmly away in the past. A strategy that, as far as Karen was concerned, worked. that had got her through the bleak and frightening times when Lisa's suicide resurfaced and threatened to engulf her.